The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
When I was in high school, we were all supposed to read The Great Gatsby. Everybody had to read The Great Gatsby. And I think we were supposed to get some anti-capitalist thing out of it. But what I got out of it was, here's this guy who was shunned for who he was. He wasn't good enough for the woman that he loved. And so he went out and he created a new identity for himself. He didn't go about his, you know, transformation in the most upstanding and moral ways, but he did succeed in becoming a self-made millionaire, and he did it for the woman that he loved. As I reflect on the news of Steve Bannon's firing from Breitbart yesterday, I can't help but see a Gatsby-like figure constantly reinventing himself. Bannon was born to an Irish working-class family in Virginia. He had nothing. He worked at a junkyard for pennies. He always wanted more for his life. He became an officer in the Navy, worked at the Pentagon. In the 80s, he went into investment banking. He went to Harvard Business School, became Goldman Sachs guy. After banking, he decided he wanted to go into the movies, and he became a screenwriter and a producer. And his film credentials ultimately led to a relationship with Andrew Breitbart. When Andrew died, Bannon saw an opportunity to create a new chapter in his book, and he pushed his way into Breitbart News, and he used that as a tool to wedge himself into the White House. But he needed to court the Trump administration, so he turned Breitbart into a site that became an embarrassing propaganda outlet, and it worked. He was named Trump's chief strategist, but it wasn't long because Steve has never really created anything himself. He has always ridden the coattails of someone else. And he's also a dangerous guy. So it didn't take long before he fell out of the White House's good graces. He started to brag that he was the brains behind the president. Then he got involved in this book. And he got involved in this book because he has a inflated sense of influence and inflated sense of self. And he was kicked to the curb. And he was back at Breitbart. And yesterday, he ushered in more of the same dangerous alt-right commentary and yellow journalism as before. And after his campaign with Roy Moore, Breitbart News, the board, fired him for good yesterday. So today, the good news is there's a new beginning for Breitbart. Maybe Andrew Breitbart's vision and what he was starting to create will actually come true now. With Bannon gone, they have a chance to restore their dignity and return to some sort of reputable reporting. Let's hope that they take that direction. As for Steve Bannon, he is going to be standing on a dock looking across the lake at the light that is calling for him. Let's just hope that in the end, the Steve Bannon story doesn't end with Bannon or us floating in a pool.
It's Wednesday, January 10th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So I really want to hear your opinion on what happened yesterday, and I want to play just the quick audio clips just to remind you where we are. Donald Trump had a had live shots of him in the cabinet room talking to all the members of Congress or the leadership of Congress about DACA and the border. And here's what he said about what he's willing to sign.
Yeah. My positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with. I am very much reliant on the people in this room. I know most of the people on both sides. I have a lot of respect for the people on both sides. And my what I approve is going to be very much reliant on what the people in this room come to me with. I have great confidence in the people. If they come to me with things that I'm not in love with, I'm going to do it because I respect them.
Okay. There's also the Trump Bill of Love, which has been a big discussion point today.
Here it is.
But I feel having the Democrats in with us is absolutely vital, because this should be a bipartisan bill. This should be a bill of love. Truly, it should be a bill of love, and we can do that.
Okay.
Yeah, but it also has to be...
And the reason why that one's important is because, if you remember from the primary, here's a Jeb Bush thing from 2014 on immigration.
Yes, they broke the law, but it's not a felony. It's kind of the it's an act of love.
Mm-hmm. There's also the his comments on earmarks, which were making the rounds yesterday. We've discussed today. Listen,
our system lends itself to not getting things done. And I hear so much about earmarks, the old earmark system, how there was a great friendliness when you had earmarks. But of course, they had other problems with earmarks. But maybe all of you should start thinking about going back to a form of earmarks, because this system,
you get it. Yeah, he goes on and he's dead serious about it.
Yeah.
And then there's one more.
Yeah. He knows that there's pushback potentially coming from
his base
and this audience and anyone who's conservative on the border. He realizes that he knows that could be coming. And here is his prescription and his hall pass to Democrats and people who are more amnesty prone on the right about how they can deal with this. Listen.
I don't care. I'll take all the heat you want to give me, and I'll take the heat off both the Democrats and the Republicans.
So he'll take the heat.
He's willing to deal with. He's willing to die in a sword, basically, mm-hmm. for this DACA deal. It's an interesting perspective from the president. I mean, it's not exactly what he was saying during the campaign.
No, it's not anything like what he was saying. But I want to hear if you have been there fighting for him the whole time, standing up for him. We asked this audience 18 months ago, what would it take? And the answer was universal. If he starts to weasel on the border and DACA and all of that, is this weaseling? How do you feel today? Josh, South Carolina, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Good.
Good, good. So, you know, I think in this case, he's really playing three sides of the fence. I don't think he's getting enough credit for what he's actually doing out there. You know, what he's going out there, he's trying to bring all these people together. He's playing the media for stupid, and now they've gone back and gone against pretty much everything they've said and praised him yesterday on what he's doing. And I honestly don't think he's just going to give them DACA. He's dangling it in front of their face, making them think that, you know, he's going to give it to them. But at the same time, he's probably going to come out there and be like, look, we have to get both of these things done at the same exact time. If it doesn't work that way, it's just not going to work that way.
Okay, well, that's not what he said yesterday. So you think that he's... that's a strategy for him.
Yeah, and you know what? That's it kind of rings. It rings true in his whole, coming forward with anything really. When he comes out to the media and says something, does he actually do what he's going to say? Has he done that this entire time? But yet, where are we now? I'm a business owner. I own a plumbing business out of South Carolina, and everything has gotten much better. People are flooding to red states. The economy's getting crazy. I just went over how much I'm paying this year in taxes with my bookie and my accountants and things like that. And it's just, everything is getting really, it's getting done. I think he's doing a lot of good things. I think there's some things like healthcare that need to get done. Mm-hmm. And if something like DACA goes through before we get some kind of immigration, a wall deal or something of that nature, then he's going ass backwards, in my opinion.
Okay.
And if he doesn't, If he goes and actually gets these things done and includes the DACA deal, I'm okay with that to a degree. I don't think any of us are okay with DACA in general, but like you said, it's pretty much the only chip he's got. And if he doesn't play that chip, then I think he's going to lose a lot of people.
So okay. It's basically, let's wait and see, right? I mean, overall, you're happy so far, but if he starts doing these things, you're not going to be happy. But he hasn't done them yet, and Trump says a lot of things he doesn't do, so we should wait until it's actually happening.
Good point. Thanks, Josh. No, go ahead.
He says a lot of things.
But I know. That's what we said last hour. We were really pissed yesterday. We're still pissed today. However, I mean, I've been happy before, and then he'll tweet something, and you just don't know.
Yeah, don't
Let's
know.
Wait until we see what he has.
This is echoed on Twitter. People are tweeting at World of Stew, at Glenn Beck. George writes, remember the Trump meeting with Chuck and Nancy? They came out smiling. That lasted a day. So will this.
Mike.
I think that's a legitimate.
I think it is.
Could easily happen.
If he feels the heat from his supporters.
Yep. If the base does not rise up and say, don't do this, I don't think that will happen, but that's what they did when the Chuck and Nancy stuff happened, and he bailed on it the next day.
Mike, go ahead.
As a 28-year-old from New York, I already feel like my voice has no consequence whatsoever. But if he does the things that he said he was going to do yesterday, he's going to inflate the swamp. If he gives away his only leverage, DACA, he's never going to get a wall built. It's never going to happen. The Democrats always stand fast. They don't work together. They get their agenda done. They don't care about anybody's agenda but their own. And yesterday, I think Donald Trump finally showed his true colors. I mean, he was a Democrat his whole life until his, what, 70s? And then he's a conservative.
You voted for him.
Unfortunately, I did, because Ted Cruz was gone by the time.
Sure.
New York got to vote in the primaries, and then I wasn't going to vote for Hillary Clinton, that's for sure. So,
why do you say your voice doesn't count? You already feel that way.
Oh, it's New York. I mean, okay. Governor Cuomo only has to win Westchester County South, and he wins every re-election. I mean, if you're a conservative in a blue state, as heavily blue as New York, California, I mean, you're irrelevant for the most part. And if we squander this opportunity, we already squandered an opportunity to elect a great Reagan-esque candidate in Ted Cruz with an impeccable conservative record. If we squander the opportunity to have a Republican in the White House, majority in the Senate and in the House, what hope do we have of ever telling the American people, oh, elect us, we're going to get stuff done? We never get stuff done, ever.
Yeah. Mike, thank you so much. Let me go to Eric in Florida, first-time Trump voter. How do you feel today?
A little upset. I'd have to disagree with Joshua, how he thinks, as Ben Shapiro calls it, Trump's playing 4D MAGA chess. I don't think that he's out here doing anything special. He's saying those things to the Democrats, and I honestly feel like if they give him something crappy, he's just signing. He's like, look, guys, I did immigration. You know, like, I'm just pretty upset. I kind of feel like Ann Coulter does every day, tweeting about the wall.
Yeah.
Ann is not happy with the developments of this presidency.
Well, she hasn't been happy for a long time, has she?
I mean,
she saw this coming too late, but she hadn't been happy for a long time.
Yeah, she wrote a book called In Trump We Trust, which, if you might notice the phrasing there, replaces God with Trump.
Yeah.
But that's the way she kind of treated it leading up to the election. But she's definitely turned and reconsidered here. And that's because that's a really important issue to her. Right. The border was a real thing. She supposedly wrote a good chunk of the initial border policy that Trump released during the campaign. And obviously he has not particularly followed that so far. But that, again, to the point of some of the people who are calling in, is this just Trump saying things? I mean, it may just be that. And if it is, then, you know, you don't worry. I will say that the one thing that is really interesting about this to me is, again, showing how terrible of an idea it was for Democrats to react to Trump the way they did. If they had approached him like this from the beginning, they would have been able to get tons of stuff done with a Republican president and not have to deal with any of the downside of it. Instead, they just treated him as if he was Satan slash Hitler from day one, and that caused him to kind of push back and just get into a fight with them. They've got plenty of room to negotiate with this guy, as he showed yesterday.
Let's go to Chase in California. Hello, Chase.
Hey, good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Very good. You voted for Donald Trump. How do you feel today?
Yeah. Well, I've kind of been in this position before where I'm feeling a little uneasy, and then he always goes out and does something that, you know, brings me back to his side where it's like, oh, yeah, that's my guy. You know, he's just playing those fools. You know, he's just playing them. And you kind of hinted at that in your opening monologue that, you know, it was a Broadway show. So I kind of feel like some of yesterday was kind of just wasn't for us necessarily, right, his supporters. It was for others. Now, and I will say that if it leads to the end of chain migration, the lottery, and a border wall, I'm okay with granting citizenship to the DACA people who don't have, you know, criminal records. Go ahead. Good. But it's gotta be part of a broader reform.
Would you say maybe a comprehensive reform is maybe the way you'd want to phrase that? Would you? Would that be the right way to say it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. A clean bill. of comprehensive reform.
Okay, let's
all right. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Per se, but
thank you, Chase. I feel the same way. Look, I just want the border secure. I want it secure. If we, and this is not popular, and I don't like doing it, but if we have to give the people who are here citizenship, it's not a good thing. I don't like it. But if that border is secure, I will trade. But I want the border secure first, and I don't think that's going to happen.
That's the amnesty position from Rubio and Bush and Graham. And yep. I mean, that's been controversial in the past.
So, he said, this is theater. I just want to give you this. This is theater. He's just playing. This is Edgar Allan Poe. Lo, it is gala night. Within the lonesome latter years, an angel throng, bewinged, belight, in veils and drowned in tears. They sit in a theater to see a play of hopes and fears, while the orchestra breathes fitfully the music of the spheres. Mimes, in the form of God on high, mutter and mumble low, and hither and thither fly, mere puppets they, who come and go. At bidding of vast formless things that shift the scenery to and fro, flapping from out their condor wings invisible woe. That motley drama, oh be sure, it shall not be forgot, with its phantom chased forevermore by a crowd, listen to this, by a crowd that sees it not, through the circle that ever returneth to the very self-same spot, and much of madness and more of sin and horror, the soul of the plot. Okay, so let's just have this right. So something's going on. We're watching a show. It's a play. Something is moving everything, and everybody is watching it, and it keeps coming back to the same thing over and over again. But see amid the mimic rout, crawling shape intrude, a blood-red thing that writhes from out the scenic solitude. It writhes with mortal pangs. The mimes become its food, and seraphs sob at vermin fangs in human gore imbued. So now something has come in, and now it's just gory. What the hell is happening? What is this? Out, out are the lights, out all, and over each quivering form the curtain, a funeral pall, comes down with a rush of a storm, while the angels, all pallid and wan, uprising, unveiling, affirm. The play is the tragedy Man, and the hero is the conqueror Worm. Meaning, yeah, you're all watching a play. It's you being eaten. That's how it ends. China made a really big move this morning at 5 a.m. Eastern Time, saying that they may either slow down or stop buying U.S. treasuries. That put the markets in a tailspin over in Asia and Europe at 5 a.m. There's a lot going on with China, militarily, economically, and in space. We'll talk about that for a few minutes when we come back.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Today at 5 o'clock, we're going to get into some of my economic forecasting for 2018. Some of the, I hate to use this word, predictions, but because they're not really predictions. They're a look at things, and some of them are a little hopeful, some of them are a little not so hopeful. But just looking at the where the world is going and what does it possibly mean? One of them today that we're talking about on the show in, what, about a half an hour, Stu, is I believe that China is going to land a rover on the dark side of the moon. And it's not really much of a prediction. They're going to claim this is a science mission, which it is. However, this is really strategic for us. If they're going to use they'll put a satellite up in halo orbit over the far side, and that will be able to control and communicate with their lunar lander or in their rover. That is first time that they've done anything like that. That's a really big deal. And I worry that this is a first step in controlling the space between the moon and the Earth. It's called cislunar space, and it's strategic and really, really important. And you kind of really don't want anybody to control that area of space because it
seems like an advantageous position to have.
It's a good place. It's kind of like a Death Star position, if you will. If you had the big laser, right, that's where you'd put it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and by the way, all the today, I think online at glenbeck.com is your predictions for 2018 when it comes to foreign affairs. This is one of them. However, a lot of that goes into what's going on in the Middle East, goes on to what's going on with immigration. It goes to the treatment of non-Muslims in the Middle East, so what we've talked about with the Nazarene Fund, socialist countries and their economies. It's all up there. And what we're doing is you go to glenbeck.com, you can read through them, and then you upvote the ones you think are going to come true. And then at the end of the day, we get to kind of see which ones you think Glenn is sane on and which ones do you think he's insane on.
Correct. And we're going to get to some of those coming up, and also the economic predictions at 5 o'clock only on the Blaze TV. Leroy Chow, he is he's an astronaut. He's an astronaut with NASA. He was the commander of the International Space. Leroy, you're
here.
I should probably ask you.
International Space Station.
The space station. And aren't you the guy who went and you have piloted Russian and Chinese or just Russian vehicles?
Oh, no, I'm an American. I was born in the U.S., and I flew three space shuttle missions before traveling to the International Space Station as a co-pilot aboard a Russian spacecraft.
That was it.
And I was the commander of the station for 6.5 months during Expedition 10.
So you haven't really accomplished much in your life, is what you're saying.
When are you going to do something with yourself? Leroy, I just have to, just on a personal side, what is it like to come back to Earth and look up and go, I'm never going to go back there, and it was the coolest thing ever?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, when I got selected to be an astronaut, I never imagined the day would come when I would decide to leave NASA. But, you know, during my first 2 weeks at NASA, there was a going away party for one of the senior guys, and I overheard somebody talking to him and talking to another guy and said, well, how do you know when it's time to leave? And he said, you know, when it's time, you'll know. And I remembered that. And 15 years later, sure enough, you know, I was getting ready to go fly to the International Space Station, or actually I'd just gotten back, and the chief asked me if I would stay for another shuttle mission. And I thought about it for about 30 seconds, and I turned him down. And I kind of surprised myself, but I'd done everything that I could do and could hope for in a flying career. You know, I'd flown space shuttle missions. I'd done spacewalks to help build the space station.
Wow.
You know,
what is it like?
The station and done all that stuff. And it was just time to go do something else.
Is there anything that the average person can compare to walking out into space the first time?
No, it is, you know, even the sixth time, it's a bit of a surreal experience. You're actually in a spacesuit, which you can think of as a personal spacecraft. You know, it's got all the life support system and everything, but you're all alone. You know, there's nobody else that can help you except for your partner who's out there with you. But, you know, it's kind of a weird feeling the very first time, looking back through the shuttle windows and waving to my buddies inside who are about 3 feet away. But, you know, if something happened, we were out there alone, and, you know, it was kind of up to us to save ourselves. But you know, it's okay because we're well trained and everything works well. And you know, certainly there's risk, but you know what to do. You know, we were able to get our jobs done, but it is kind of a weird thing, you know.
Yeah, I bet it is. I bet it is. I wanted to ask you about the Chinese shot of the what is it, the Chang'e?
Chang'e, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can you explain going on the other side of the moon?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be the first time, really, that we can hear deep sky or radio without all of the static from Earth, right?
Not really, because you still have to relay through that that relay satellite, right? So
right.
You know, the fact that they're going to the far side of the moon is unique. Nobody has landed a probe over there, not for any particular reason, except that, you know, you have to have a relay satellite in order to communicate with it. So they've got to first put that relay satellite in that halo orbit so that you can relay messages from the far side of the moon back to the ground stations on the Earth. But it's going to be interesting to see if there's any difference between what we found on our scientific probes on the side that we can see versus the far side.
Why all of a sudden, and I think it's a great thing. I mean, I'm excited with, you know, with what Elon Musk is doing and everything else. But mm-hmm. why all of a sudden do we have this race, it seems, to go up into space again?
Well, you know, you're right. The commercial side has been the very exciting wild card. I mean, NASA has been going along. We've done the shuttle program, station program, and we're kind of plodding along with exploration, although there's been no serious, you know, or no significant, I should say, or farther advancing political and financial commitment to that. There's been a lot of talk, and we are developing the new vehicles, but it's Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos,
yeah.
SpaceX and Blue Origin. And here are two guys who are visionaries and who are willing to commit their resources, their personal and influential resources, to go ahead and do exploration. You know, that's never been done before by commercial companies. You know, where's the profit in colonizing Mars, as Elon Musk wants to do, or in the case of Jeff Bezos, he wants to build infrastructure in low Earth orbit and out into cislunar space. So, you know, he's kind of doing, sounds like kind of a Field of Dreams thing, you know, build it and they'll come.
Yeah.
But it would be difficult to get like a Boeing or a Lockheed. There's no way their shareholders or their boards would let them go do these things.
Yeah.
But these guys, they're out there and they're serious. They're building rockets. They're launching rockets. And it's pretty exciting. They're pushing exploration. For the first time, we've got commercial companies pushing exploration.
How realistic? I've read that helium-3 is, the moon is rich with helium-3. And if you had a fusion system that you could, if you could fill the space shuttle with helium-3 and it would run, it would be enough power for the United States for a year. Is there any way to transfer this or use this?
Well, helium-3, I mean, the helium-3 is present on the moon, but it's in the soil in the parts per billion concentrations. So that is, you know, for every gram of helium-3 that you might harvest, it'd be a billion grams of regolith, you know, lunar soil that you'd have to go through and find a way to separate this stuff out. So it's theoretically possible. You could certainly theoretically possible to separate the helium-3 and store it and bring it back to Earth. But the other part of the problem is we don't have a fusion reactor. You know, we've been 20 years from a fusion reactor since the 1950s,
yeah.
Right? And so you know, we need to invent a fusion reactor that is practical and actually works before we talk about bringing helium-3 back from the moon. But people that, you know, have used helium-3 as a justification for going back to the moon, and to me that's nice, but there are a lot more practical reasons to go. If we're going to go to Mars, the moon is the perfect place to prove your equipment, to train your crews, to get some experience before sending all that stuff to Mars, because the moon is pretty close. It's only 3 days away. If there's an issue, you can get your crew back. Mars, on the other hand, the closest approach is, you know, on the average, about 6 months away.
As we saw with Matt Damon recently.
Yeah, right. We should. That guy, man, he was...
He's had a tough time.
Yeah.
Many journeys have turned out poorly for Matt Damon. It's sad.
Leroy, when you hear the size of the rocket that Elon Musk is building, he says it's going to be 40 stories tall and can fit a 747 inside of the bay. When you see, and I know this is Hollywood, but when you see these movies and they we are developing eventually some sort of interplanetary vehicles, they're enormous. Do we build those in space on the moon, or do we launch them?
You know, there are different ways to look at this. So Elon Musk did announce these huge rockets that he wants to build, and that's to support his vision of colonizing Mars. So he's envisioning building spacecraft that can take 100 or more passengers to go, you know, start to colonize Mars. So there are two schools of thought. Either you launch it all at once, and you've got to have a huge rocket to do that, or you build gas stations in, say, in low Earth orbit or in orbit around the moon, and then you launch kind of an empty vehicle out there and then fuel it up to go, right? So there are pluses and minuses to each approach, but what Elon is talking about is building a huge rocket, much bigger than the Saturn V. In fact, in the 1950s, 1960s, the United States, it was called the Nova rocket. You know, they had these ideas where they were going to build these similarly huge rockets to do interplanetary exploration. So there's certainly something to that. There's some history to it. You know, the thing with Elon Musk that I've learned is that he may not make the exact date that he projects, but by and large, he's able to get things done. You look at the successes of SpaceX with Falcon 9 and with Tesla. It's pretty impressive.
So if Elon Musk called you and said, hey, I want you to come and colonize Mars, and you could take your family, would you do it?
Nah, you know what? I would love to go explore Mars, but I have no interest in living there. Life is much better here on the Earth, even from low Earth orbit. You know, it's great to go out there and have the adventure, but I'm going to come back here.
Yeah. Leroy, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Leroy,
yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, Leroy Chow, an astronaut extraordinaire, and something that the early astronauts did not have the opportunity to do, and that's go back into space over and over and over again.
Glenn Beck.
Sheila is in Florida, and she voted for Donald Trump, and we're kind of taking a temperature of the audience today. How do you feel about what happened yesterday with Donald Trump and DACA and the border, and saying, you know, it doesn't matter. I trust the people in Congress. You bring it to me, both Democrats and Republicans, and I will sign it even if I disagree with it, and I'll take the heat for it. Sheila, how do you feel?
Well, actually, it's Lisa, but hello.
Oh, hi, Lisa.
Glenn, I've listened to you since way before 911, and I've just been such a fan, and I've just been fascinated by everything that you have
Thank
done
you.
And accomplished. So
Thank
congratulations
you.
on everything. But, yeah, I was a reluctant Trump voter. My husband was a fan. I was a Ted Cruz person.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, I was fascinated by what was going on. I thought that the theater of bringing the press into that meeting was brilliant. I mean, he took the focus on that Michael Wolff book
yep.
completely off the table.
Mm-hmm.
He shut down everybody that was saying that he's, you know, mentally deranged and
yep.
he's a narcissistic baby,
yep.
the whole bit.
Yep.
He came across as such a negotiator and such a calm, cool, collected person. I am hoping beyond hope that what he's doing is at least getting the Democrats to the table, because he's right. Everybody is so polarized. Nobody can have a conversation about anything. Everybody's back in their corner.
So
they want what they want.
I agree with you, Sheila, and that is good. How will you feel if what he said yesterday is how he does it, which I'll give you DACA, and we can do that first? Does he need to?
Deflated.
What?
Yeah. I'll be pretty deflated about it.
Yeah. Because I don't trust the Democrats would actually give us the wall after they have what they have. But we'll watch. Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate it. God bless.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
So you're doing a lot of post-holiday shopping from your mobile device? Retailers expect 54% of the holiday shoppers to visit their sites from mobile devices. 54%. Scammers, of course, see this as an opportunity to steal your credit card information and other personal data by distributing phony retail apps. Be cautious when you're going online. Don't only download the apps from the reputable app stores. Read the reviews for any complaints about malware. You got to do that. 1 in 4 people have experienced identity theft, and if you're only monitoring your credit, your identity can still be stolen in ways you may not detect. Thieves could steal your information from the dark web and get an online payday loan in your name. It's dangerous out there. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity thefts, and if you have a problem, U.S.-based restoration specialists will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can uncover threats you might miss. Join now. Get 10% off with promo code BECK, 1-800-LIFELOCK. 10% off with promo code BECK at 1-800-LIFELOCK.